Welcome aboard the Funny Boat Podcast. We're trying this one again because I had a failure. I'm just failing at life. That's okay. With me is a suspiciously unfuzzy-faced fellow, Ian Dimka.
Yes, the broker who cannot grow a beard.
He's been on the show before, so I trust him to be a temporary co-host. Don't worry, it is temporary.
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm tempted, but, you know, clearly the curse of not having Ed here is real.
Yeah, any chances of me making this an extended gig has been completely destroyed.
Oh, my.
By the fates. By the ghouls and the fates.
Ah, and I've done something silly, and I have outnumbered myself today, and I've added another broker. We have Hillary Howell in the house.
Hello.
We're in the house.
So I've done, this is fun because on one side we have Mr. Powerboat and on the other side we have the sailing instructor, seller, everything you could possibly
it's
want to do
sailboats
with
all the
masts
time.
And madness. Hillary's got you. And I'm clearly
like
losing my mind.
Match or something.
Well, yeah, it is. I hope. Well, you guys are gonna fight later.
But oh, I didn't know that was part.
I didn't know we were signing up for that.
My retainer just went up.
Two beers now, huh?
We've been talking about boats and the difference between, you know, powerboats and sailboats. And one of the things that is very interesting to me is the fact that in the Chesapeake Bay, we segregate our powerboats from our sailboats. And I'm using that word, and it feels naughty and aggressive, but it's true. The sailboat shows are separate from the powerboat shows here in the Chesapeake Bay. So have you two ever encountered each other, ever?
No, never.
No,
we
never
have never met.
No.
Huh. Okay. Do you know any sailboat brokers, Ian?
The only sailboat brokers that I know are sailboat brokers who have also sold powerboats.
Oh. Hillary, have you ever sold a powerboat?
Yes, I have sold. Oh. Yes. I have sold a few. It's true.
What was that like?
Well, you know, it was odd. What can I say? It's like, what is this stuff? I don't know. But people wanted to buy it, and other people wanted to sell it. So I helped the communication happen. So,
have you ever sold a sailboat, Ian?
No, I have not.
Not one?
Not one.
Not even, like, never?
No.
Would
12,
you?
13 years. Nope, not one sailboat. I would. Yes, I would 100%.
Would you really?
If there's enough money on the table?
Yeah. Yeah, if someone came to me and is like, I want to buy an Oyster 65.
Yes.
For $3 million.
You're ready.
And I like you, Ian. I want you to be my broker. I am getting that paper signed and delivering the offer. And then I am finding all those people who you just mentioned who have also sold powerboats, but also sold sailboats, and I am giving them a call and paying them money to tell me what to do because I don't know jack about sailboats. So I will get my own professional advisor.
God, I want an oyster. God, those are such pretty boats. Well, you know, for a powerboater, you did pick a good one.
It's the only good one.
Lucky.
I know.
You got lucky. You got lucky. What were the powerboats that you sold?
And it's a proper powerboat too. It's like an express. So it was like everybody wanted one. Everybody wanted it. I sold it to like literally the first person to step aboard.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
That's too. Does that
crazy.
Ever happen?
It was just what he was looking for. The folks who were selling it because they didn't need a boat that big anymore because they had their house by the water built now. So they were getting a smaller boat that would fit their dock.
That happens a lot. That happens a lot. Especially in the powerboats because you
People
get that.
Up, down.
You get the larger motor yacht that's like a condo on the water.
Yep. Yeah.
Has all those home amenities because they live an hour or 2 hours away from the water, and so they come down to the boat, and it's their place where, you know, they can go to A and B, but, you know, if they just, it's a place to be. And then,
yeah,
whether or not it's a move or a semi-retirement.
Condo sailboats, too.
Yeah, so, or retirement, yeah, or whatever. And it's like, well, I don't need the condo on the water boat anymore because I've got my condo on the water, so now I want a smaller boat.
Okay. I mean, this feels, what we're on right now, and part of the reason I tricked these two into coming is I know that they sell used boats. And my friend is trying to sell this used boat that we're on right now. It was a gorgeous little charter boat that would tootle around Baltimore. Huge cockpit, really nice bow area for taking those Instagram pictures, which is why it was such a good charter boat. But it's hard. And yeah, it's hard to figure out how to market your used boat. And I don't know how much brokers help with. Is that something you guys help with? Like, I don't.
A lot.
I
do.
Oh, you do?
I don't know about you.
It's a big part of the job.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah. There's two kinds of brokers.
So there's the listing broker and there's the selling broker. And the listing broker helps you list the boat, right?
Okay.
But the selling broker is working for the buyer.
Okay.
So they find the boats out there and then they show them. So,
do you ever have a buyer's broker call you and say, hey, my client is coming to look at this boat, but they really hate valance curtains. Could you rip all of those off like before they show up? Sure. Is that something that happens?
I haven't had one that extreme, but I mean,
specialized like that. Yeah. There's some people who want to see everything you have at your marina in this size range. So we'll do showings like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you'll have the most common one is somebody who's just more particular about cleanliness or something like that, where it's like, hey, you know, this guy really, really cares about a clean engine room. So if the engine room hasn't been detailed, have it detailed. Or this person's really particular about stains on the upholstery. So if there's any stains on the upholstery, see if you can get those clean. You know, just those kinds of things, you know. And a lot of it just goes to general maintenance, general condition of the boat, you know, and what people need to do to sell it depends really a lot on what the market's like, you know, because that varies tremendously.
Because condition is everything, right? I mean, regardless, if you're picking a boat by its age or size or whatever, you want the one with the best condition. So just want to clear stuff away. And we don't know whether someone's going to react to painting I've got on the wall or whatever, you know, or it might look cute to you, but it may not look cute to them. So we go clean, clean, clean.
Oh yeah. Well, it's the same thing that somebody's looking at buying a new home or of a used home or a new car over a used car. You know, the best condition a car is going to be in is when it's brand new. Even the stuff that is broken when it's brand new is covered under warranty because it has a warranty.
Right.
So for the best, the best condition of a boat that you want is a brand new boat. Even if there's stuff that's wrong with it, it's going to be covered under warranty for several years. That's always going to be the situation. So people who are looking at pre-owned boats, it's one of two things. Either don't want to spend the money to buy a new boat because it is a depreciating asset.
Yes.
Or don't have the money to spend on a new boat.
Yes.
And can afford the depreciating asset. Those are the two reasons. Either don't want to or can't. Otherwise, everybody would buy a new boat.
Sometimes they don't want to wait for it, though.
Yeah. Well, that's also true.
Ooh, if you have, interesting. That was a big problem these last few years.
It was a big problem, yeah.
Yeah. Not a problem right now, but
there's inventory.
Yeah. But yeah, previous, basically from 2021 until this year, you had inventory issues.
Right.
If I had to ask you right now, what is the used boat market looking like? What would you say?
It's vicious.
Vicious. He said vicious.
I think we say it's a buyer's market, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
It's a buyer's market. Vicious, yes, versus buyer. Man, I thought it's you would be a little similar, more political. Good to know.
No, it's, but it
there's uncertainty in the economy, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
it's a it's an aggressive market.
Okay.
That's probably a more tamer way of saying it. It's a very aggressive market. It's leaning more towards buyers because there is uncertainty just overall in the economy. a lot of the supply issues have caught up. And again, this gets back into the new boat stuff. You know, when there was not any new boat inventory to be sold, anybody who would have otherwise been purchasing a brand new boat, if they wanted to go boating now and not wait in line for a year, they were looking at a very lightly used pre-owned boat, the lightest used pre-owned boat you could find. And so that increase in demand kind of goes down the line. There's more demand for the late model boats, which then the people who would normally buy late model boats, they can't get them because they're getting sucked up by the people who would otherwise buy new boats. And so then the guys who are buying late model boats now have to find a boat that's, you know, 1 or 2 years old. And you had that kind of spiral of demand during COVID, not just from supply chain issues and the increased in demand of just boating in particular, because it was something you could do when you couldn't do other stuff. But you also had that upward pressure from not having new boat inventory. And now we're seeing the inverse of that, where the supply issues have, they're not the same, but they've normalized. You know, demand has gone down a little bit because now there's other stuff to do. So people who were buying boats during COVID because there was nothing else to spend your money on, they're now spending their money on those other things again. And so you see that, and because of that, the increased supply coming in, you now have boats on the lot. You have new boats that are in inventory, and that puts downward pressure on things all the way down the line.
What do your sales meetings look like? Because I imagine this sounds very intense. This sounds like we're putting pressure and it's shoving in here and it's getting real, honestly, pervy sounding. What are we talking about?
It's a pretty laid back industry. You know,
Is it?
Yeah, I think it is. In the new boat market, there's a little more pressure because you've got this, you know, depreciating asset in your inventory that you've got to move out. For us, it's like someone already owns this thing,
right?
We just have to coordinate the transfer to somebody else. And, you know, and I think the goal for most people would, if you're getting a cruising yacht or something like that, you're one that's been out there a couple of years, right? So that everything that has broken has been fixed,
right?
But more than that, if it's 5 years, maybe things are starting to break again.
That's actually a really interesting point, because I hate brand new boats, because I promise you things are going to break.
There's a reason why they have warranties. There's a reason for that.
I get real stressed out as a captain when you tell me, oh, this boat has 1 hour on it. I'm like, oh, no.
What's going to happen now?
Oh yeah, you're bound to have a bunch of stuff. I mean, because even with all the testing that you do, you know, you items that have a small flaw in them will not catastrophically fail the second that they're used. Usually it's a small thing that over continuous loose use gets worse and worse and worse until it eventually fails.
Sure.
And you're only going to come across that. And oftentimes it's a manufacturing or an assembly defect.
Right.
Which is why it's always covered under the warranties. But it takes time and use for those things to come out.
Right.
Sure.
And so that's, you know, that's why all the boat manufacturers, you know, depending on the manufacturer, it's 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, whatever.
Right.
But it's why it's generally at least 12 months, if not 18 or 24 months of warranty, because their thinking is, you know, they're the things that could break due to manufacturer or assembly error are going to break within this time frame, whether or not it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. And they give the customer that protection on the new boat side.
And there are no warranties on used boats.
Correct.
Because there's no insurance company that is that crazy.
Well, it's funny because on power boats, there isn't a word for it. But on sailboats, there is. And it's called a shakedown sail. A shakedown sail is when you literally put everything up, you use everything, and you try to find out what is going to break on you.
Yes. Yes. And you look for some bad weather to do that.
Oh, yeah, you do.
So sailboaty.
It's so sailboaty. And I have a love hate with shakedown sails because, yes, you do get to molest brand new boats, which is my favorite thing in the world.
Oh, this is a brand new, like prior to delivery.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. And you get to raise the sail for the first time, and the crinkle noise that it makes when it's that fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so good. It tastes delicious. the synesthesia of it.
That's what we were talking about before take three started. the passion of the act of sailing being so different than the passion of the act of driving a powerboat. It's totally different.
You're right. It is different. There's an expression that my father has, but you said it in a slightly nicer way. Oh. But I'm going to say it the way my dad says it, which is power boaters have a destination and sailboaters are already there.
That's a good way to twist it.
Yeah,
that's
a
really good way to twist it. I like it.
It's not about A to B. It's not about any of that. It's that sailboaters are doing the thing they wanted to do when they're sailing.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a lot of sense when I think about myself when I'm sailing. I'm like, yeah, I'm tweaking. Mm-hmm. I'm adjusting. Yep. I'm going, shh, everybody shut up. Do you hear that? It's nothing. Shh.
I will say that is one of the beautiful things about being on a sailboat is, because again, I never sailed. So anytime I sailed, I'm sitting on the bow, not doing anything other than drinking beer. The ability to be up there and it's just, there's nothing. You get a little bit of breeze. You hear a little clink and clanking from the stuff that connects up to the mast.
You know, the stuff.
The stuff. Yeah. We got up there.
The wires and the whatever you sugar the doodles, whatever you call it.
And the doodle bobs.
Yeah.
All that
stuff. You get a little bit of that, but mainly it's just the whooshing of the breeze. And that's cool. That is
all sailboats, you know, above a certain size have an engine, right? And
yeah.
So some of us get good at working our engines and making it work and so on, but when we're sailing, our favorite time is when we shut off that engine and it's beautiful. And the second favorite time is when we're coming back into port and that engine actually starts.
Well said. Oh man, I think I
anybody
the two best minutes of a sailboat cruise. When you turn off the engine and when you turn it back on again.
Oh, I love that.
When you have to dock a boat without the engine working, it definitely tests you.
Okay. Oh God.
Yeah, that's gotta be skillful. I don't do that anymore.
I had Boat US on this podcast, and let me tell you, if the engine's not coming on, that's it. I'm calling them. Like, I'm not even trying anymore. That's too hard. I'm too old.
How many, you talked about US, did you ask them how many calls they get on sailboats as opposed to powerboats or just in general?
I didn't ask them what the ratio is, but that is a very interesting.
Really interesting.
What's funny is I personally have called them more for powerboats than sailboats.
Okay.
Well, that's what one would think.
Yeah. Because you've got,
more stuff.
It is just an auxiliary engine, right?
Auxiliary. Yeah. God, that's such a technique.
Because your primary way is sailing.
So, I love that. I assume
it's not called a trolling motor.
So Hillary is Captain Hillary, by the way. And I assume she has her auxiliary sail endorsement.
I do indeed.
Which is why she's saying all these fabulous
words.
And I
sail from about 24 footers to about 66 footers, I
Perfect.
Guess. So, yeah.
Nice.
Ah, glorious. Yeah. Have you done a lot of deliveries?
I've done some, and as a broker, it's very often people who buy a boat from me, I'll do a teaching delivery for them.
Oh,
so
that's lovely.
They'll learn about their boat, you know. Ideally, they already know something about sailing before they get aboard. They'll be learning about their boat as we take it to wherever their home port is.
That's nice.
Yeah, that works out really well.
I like that.
It's a really nice value add.
Yeah.
From a sales perspective, yeah. Yeah.
Ian's all upset that he's not doing that.
No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
I don't want to be there when it breaks.
No, I want to have a professional who can get paid to do the thing so that when it's done well, I'm the person who got them set up. And when it doesn't go well, I'm not the person who did it.
I'm literally about to do a training delivery for one of Ian's clients.
And there are captains who refuse to do that. They will do a delivery, but without the owner on board.
It's harder.
It's harder.
I charge more for it.
Sure.
Because it's not, they're not functional crew. I can't leave them at the helm. Yeah. I have to be participating in their experience the whole time.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So I still have to bring in a mate. I still have to bring in my full weight of education fuerte. I don't even know what to call it exactly.
And it's tough to fake it too when they're on board, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. So let's say something goes wrong on a training delivery. Oh, well, now we have to go into how exciting. I get to train you in how to fix this problem. When if it was just a straight delivery, I'd go, fuck.
Now imagine if you're the person who sold it to them.
Oh, yeah. See, that's up.
And that's why I don't do deliveries.
Okay, that's interesting. Now I understand. Hillary, I think you might be messing up. I love
it. Well, I'm sure to get paid separately for it.
It's important. It's important. Okay, so I want to do a little background because you have an amazing resume, if I'm honest, for sailing.
Astounding, maybe. I don't know that it's amazing. Perhaps astounding.
Well, I think your path to becoming a boat broker is different. It's certainly different than this one's.
We've very different.
Go check out episode. I'll plug it in here.
Put it in the show notes.
Show notes to hear how he got into it. But you started with a love of the game.
I did. Yeah. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and so I learned to sail in college. That was a long time ago for your, let's just say that. but you know, I got busy with my career and my daughter and family life and all that. And so sailing became kind of armchair sailing for a long time for me, right? And then it wasn't until 2000 when I moved here, I started to see opportunities. And by 2016, I owned a boat. And then I got to race down in the Caribbean and got to race up here and sail on lots of people's boats and sailed my own boat with lots of people on board and that kind of stuff. So that was a lot of fun. But then COVID came.
Yeah.
And the event industry that I was in shut down entirely.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, retirement has been just around the corner for me for a while. I'm going to retire during COVID and I can either teach sailing or I can be a yacht broker.
Ah.
And within about 30 days, there was huge demand for both of those things.
Massive demand.
So within 30 days, I was doing both of them.
I love that. Good for you. Good for you.
So how different is the boating on the West Coast and the East Coast? Because you've done both.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that strikes me about the Chesapeake is it's, you know, such a easy place to learn here, you know? I mean, we've got mud all around us for the bottom, right? Mm-hmm. In San Francisco Bay, it's nothing but rocks, right?
Yeah, you mess up in San Francisco.
You mess up big.
Mess up big.
Yeah. So current, maybe a knot and a half here.
Yeah.
San Francisco, 7 knots, okay? You make a mistake and you go out the Golden Gate Bridge, you know?
Yeah, you got a little bit of flow going on.
You're 2 weeks to Hawaii, okay, if you make a mistake. Here, it's like, okay, you know, it's a quick jump to lots of different harbors, you know? And plenty of places to anchor if you want. There's just, it's a playground, frankly.
It's a playground.
Yeah.
That's a great word for it. I do love
the
Chesapeake
playground, if you will.
I hate the West Coast. I'm going to lose so many
Why
spots.
Why do you hate the West Coast?
Oh, because it's cold and it's big and it's awful.
We do wear our Fowleys all summer long.
Yep. So cold. So cold. But it's, man, it's one of these things where I love the Chesapeake Bay because I'm such an advocate for people getting into boating, and there's no easier, more fun place to do it than the Chesapeake.
Yeah.
And I always say it, if the water was blue, nobody would boat anywhere else.
Oh, this would be the prime destination in the Western Hemisphere.
The world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nobody would boat anywhere
else. If we had crystal
blue
water, oh my God.
Yeah.
It would be amazing.
That being said, I've gotten to sail a lot of places, and I find that I like to sail in Newport, for example, because there's some kind of camaraderie that happens when you're sailing against people who are like, you know, I used to 12 meter and by the way, the New York Yacht Club Regatta is next week and I could get you on a boat.
Yeah.
There's a camaraderie there that's very different than sailing in the Chesapeake, where it's kind of like, just walk down the dock, you'll get on a boat and get to sail for what Tuesday night races, Wednesday night races, Thursday night, Friday.
because almost anybody you know has a boat.
Exactly.
Of some sort.
Exactly.
Your doctor.
So the Chesapeake
dentist,
is sailing for the common man.
Thank you. That is what I'm saying. I think that's why it appeals to me personally. It really scratches the itch I have of infecting other people with this boating thing. Because it's so easy to do it. And that, I believe that is part of my purpose in a global set. I'm going to put some kind of sound effect here. That's like, I don't know. Like something biblical. I'm not sure exactly, but it's going to be there.
Well, I do like to encourage more diversity too, because it's a very white, you know, sailing tends to be very white.
Yeah.
And so we get, you know, more Hispanics, we get into it, and South Asian and Black people who are doing it here. And there's like every level people can do sailing at.
I'm so excited to get Black Women Boat on.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen their Instagram?
Oh, they're awesome.
They're coming on the podcast soon.
Yay.
I'm getting them.
Yay.
They're so awesome. Just briefly, they told me one of their biggest hurdles is swimming lessons.
Oh, sure.
And I thought that was so interesting that, people are afraid to boat if they can't swim.
Yeah.
And I realized I don't swim at all. boating, I don't like
well,
it.
True.
I don't want it.
That's what a life vest is for.
That's not a requirement.
That's failing.
I like, you know, you're not boating at that point. Stop it. So that's going to be an interesting conversation, but do you have any more words of wisdom for anybody who is selling their used boat?
Do what your broker tells you. Even
hey,
when it costs money. Yes. I mean, it depends very much so on the market. I know we talked about the market earlier. And it is definitely more of a buyer's friendly market than it has been in the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
You have more boats out there for sale and fewer people out there looking to buy them. Buyers have more choices, which means they can be more persnickety.
Persnickety is a good word.
About which boat they decide not to buy, not to put an offer in on, but to take the time to go look at. Like it's not even getting to the finish line. It's getting to the start line that is the bigger challenge. And
I think you're right.
In this age where everything is digital marketing, everything is online, you know, working with a broker, we do everything we can to help sell our clients' yachts.
Yeah.
Our job in terms of our personal communication with a potential buyer starts when they reach out to us.
Ooh.
The average buyer goes through 60 to 70% of the buying process before we get that opportunity.
Ooh.
Wow.
Because they're going online, they're doing their research, yep. they're looking on Yacht World and Boats.com and all the different websites and looking at pictures and videos and this and that, the other thing. And we can do some things ahead of time in terms of putting a really crackerjack listen together, getting lots of information mm-hmm. on it, getting video together, all that kind of stuff. But if the boat is not in good condition,
right.
if it's not photogenic, if it's dirty, if it's got a bunch of personal items everywhere where it's not going to look very good, and if it has a bunch of mechanical problems, the boat's never going to sell in a market like this.
Mm.
In 2021, 2022, 2023, where if it was listed for sale, it was buying it because there were 10 people looking to buy for something that buy something that didn't exist until your boat popped on the market. Yeah, you can get away with some of that stuff. But yeah. now we're back to what we were doing prior to COVID, which was you need to treat selling your yacht like you are selling your really nice high-end car and selling your home.
Mm.
When you're selling your really nice home, you clean it, you stage it, keep it nice. You make sure that the people who are doing the marketing and advertise from you can make a beautiful picture from your canvas.
Yeah.
And if your boat's full of stuff, that's not going to happen. And you're just like when you're selling a nice high-end car, somebody who's buying a nice high-end car is not going to buy it if the motor's not working or if it's making a crazy noise.
That noise
or
that
I was, you know, something
with.
Else is going wrong with it. So you need to make sure that it's working properly because, like, again, buyers have options right now.
And
if your boat is slacking, they're going to walk and get something else.
You're bumming me out, Ian. Jeez, this sounds like work.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not. So, see, that's the thing, though. It's not work. It's just saying yes to what people are suggesting you do. But that costs money.
It is a spend and to make the money, right? And so, you know, if you had a survey when you bought it, make sure everything on that survey got done.
Oh, okay? Interesting.
Because if we show them that survey and they say, has everything been done? Even if it was the cigarette lighter was bad or something, it's like, oh, there's something. It's not done, right?
Oh, so, that's a good piece. So you're saying
look
when
back
you
at your
bought
old
the boat,
survey, yeah.
get that survey, go through it. If they said fix something, fix it.
Yeah, make sure all that's fixed.
That.
Anything that's obvious to you, make sure it's fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're going to be showing a boat, make sure your stuff is off of it. If you're continuing to sail the boat or something while it's for sale, make sure that you tidy up when you leave, right? And make sure it smells good.
Oh yeah.
Boat smelling good. That's really critical for, you know, like we got onto this boat, we said old boat smell, right?
Nah.
And we don't mind it because, you know, we know. But if people haven't been on boats before that are 40 years old, they don't, you know, they won't go, oh, that's okay. No, they want it to smell just as fresh as the day is new, you know? So,
yeah. God, I need a sponsor right here. I'm sure there's some company.
Does Audubon do sponsors?
I need a find me a sponsor for this because you're not wrong. The only reason I go look at boats for people is because somebody needs to smell it. And I get paid all the time by people who
go smell a boat.
Yeah, could you go look at this boat for me? Could you go smell it? Like, just give it a big old...
So many bad jokes I'm holding in right now.
Well, very often, if it's been maintained well,
yeah,
it smells good, right? If it hasn't, it doesn't smell good.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, somebody forgot about the boat and...
Somebody forgot to pump their boat out before they winterized it.
Yeah. Or, you know, or just mold or mildew or any of that stuff. That has a scent to it. So, yeah.
Huh. I mean, I've even gotten to the point where I've had two clients this year and they had older boats.
What do you consider an older boat, just so I know?
10 years.
Okay.
More than 10 years.
There are marinas
that's
a, around.
That's like a newer boat for me.
I was going to say. Well, there are marinas around that won't
20,
even deal
30,
with a 10-year-old boat.
You know, that's what I'm selling.
But that's also a difference between sailboats and powerboats. Like,
right.
You can have a 40-year-old sailboat that is perfectly fine
yeah.
and seaworthy.
Complete
and is,
jewel
and is a great...
Yeah.
A 40-year-old powerboat is...
No.
It's danger. It's dangerous.
It's dangerous. Which makes it sexier. I didn't say that.
That's fine. I'll let somebody else solve this. I'm okay with that. But no, like I even had like some of those customers who had an older boat, like 10 years or more. I even suggested having them get with technicians or surveyors and have them do not a full pre-purchase survey, because they don't have to go through the things of like hauling the boat out and tapping the bottom and all those kinds of, but like have a surveyor go through the boat.
Yeah.
Like they would, plugging everything in, testing all the systems, making sure that stuff works, and take the boat out with a sea trial with a mechanic or with a technician who's an expert on that drive system.
Yeah.
And make sure everything is working right.
In the same way that a buyer will send, I'm not a surveyor, but I can step on board and tell you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you big stuff right away.
Well, yeah. And, you know, another broker said to me, I take a good hard look at that boat when I take it on as a listing.
Ah.
And I decide whether I'm going to list it or not.
Oh.
Yeah, because anything I list, I want to be able to sell, right? So he taps the deck and... and everything. So, and if it's out of the water, we go ahead and tap the hull too. And once in a while, after a while, you learn what those sounds are that, you know, you're not a surveyor, but you can spot things that are going to be a problem.
Huh.
Yeah. As a broker, there's nothing worse than a boat that you can't sell.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have two brokers here though, and I don't have a surveyor around to give me the stink eye. I have an interesting relationship with surveyors.
Huh?
I'm usually the buyer's side. I'm usually the seller's side.
Okay.
And they're
running
hiring.
The boat.
I'm running the boat. So I show up and somebody is going, this thing is fiddly in a way that I don't like. And I go, I mean, it's a flipper switch. You're supposed to fiddle. Like, what are we talking about? But I've had other surveyors that, you know, they get on board and they tell me things like, hey, we're like a couple seconds from this battery exploding. And I go, oh my God, thank you so much. I love you. So what is the broker experience of surveyors?
Well,
a necessary evil?
No, not a necessary evil, because from us, from a salesperson standpoint, you know, when we're selling a product, whether it's new or used to a client, and with surveyors, you're always talking about pre-owned products. You're not,
you're not
generally surveying
a brand new boat
because you have warranties and all those kinds of things. But, a surveyor is, I mean, for lack of a better way to say it, taking the liability off of you.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm selling the listing.
Okay.
I'm selling the boat to a customer,
mm-hmm.
whether or not I'm the listing broker or I'm an agent just representing the buyer, or I'm operating as a dual agent where I'm representing the buyer and the seller.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, generally it's probably about a 50-50 blend
mm-hmm.
between co-brokerage deals, which means I'm only representing a buyer or a seller in a particular transaction, and a dual agent deal where I'm representing both parties. Like somebody reached out to me directly about one of my listings mm-hmm. or something like that. And having a surveyor doing the survey, they're able to find, you know, what's right with the boat, what's wrong with the boat. And from me as a salesman's perspective, I want that because that takes the onus off of me.
Right.
whether or not I know or don't know about certain items.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of, and more often than not, the vast majority more often than not, things that come up on survey that end up like scuttling a deal because it's a major issue or something like that are typically items that are not known to anybody, not known to the buyer, right. not known to the seller, not known to the broker, not known yeah. to anyone.
That makes yeah. sense. That makes or a lot of sense.
Or they're items that the seller knew about and frankly didn't tell the broker about because they knew right. that the broker was going to tell them they needed to get it fixed and they didn't want to spend the money to fix it.
But more often than not, you know, the input from the surveyor changes the price of the boat as opposed to scuttling the deal.
Oh, interesting.
It very rarely just scuttles the deal.
Oh, yeah.
In my experience, anyway, it very rarely scuttles the deal.
Okay.
But it's important that people get what they're expecting,
yeah.
right? And so the people who are buying a project, right, and their boats are out there and they need to be sold and so on. But if they want a boat that is fully functional and everything, then or they don't have the skills to take on a project or the time or the interest, you know, that they don't get that. So I think, like you said, how it you know, takes some of the pressure off of you. I think that having that independent voice is what's is incredibly important. And I think there's so much knowledge locked in those guys too.
Yes.
Is that I just tell my clients, I go, look, find a broker, or I'm sorry, find a surveyor that you communicate well with, right? Because yeah. that's very often the difference is because they all have the skills. Who do you communicate with? And some are more verbal than others, and some are more, you know, textural. And so it's somebody who you communicate with. And I have a list. So I say, you know, talk to a few of them, see who you're communicating with. And when they bring that surveyor in, I like the surveyor that, you know, doesn't kill the deal, right? so there's that.
Murder, murder, death.
Unnecessarily.
If the deal is worth being killed, I have no problem.
Exactly.
I have no problem with the surveyor killing the deal if it's worthy of being killed.
But so ideally you have a surveyor that doesn't have an axe to grind or something with a certain brand or something like that.
Interesting.
It just happened.
Oh.
But it's important that they have that independence, right? That
yeah.
we didn't pick the surveyor. I bought a house that way that one time where the realtor picked the surveyor.
Yuck.
That went very badly, but
yeah.
So maybe that's a personal thing.
Okay. That's actually solid advice for anybody
buying. You get that a lot where customers, like I've gotten a lot of times with like new boats and people looking to trade in a boat and you're like, okay, well, what's this boat? And it may be similar to what I'm selling or whatever. And like, oh, well, I bought it from Florida or I bought it from North Carolina or I bought it from Georgia or wherever. It's like, oh, well, who was the broker? Oh, he was the local broker. And, oh, who's the surveyor? Oh, it was somebody he knew because I didn't know him. And then you're like, okay, well, okay. Now I know why you've got a litany of issues.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know?
Are you throwing other brokers under the bus?
No, I didn't say anybody specifically.
Oh, my God. You are meant for the Funny Boat Podcast, and I love it so very much.
There are good brokers, and then there are less
Take
good brokers.
Take three of the Funny Boat Podcast. That's where we're at right now.
We're not naming any names, though.
All right,
no,
all right.
No names.
So if somebody wants to buy boats with you all, how do they find you, Hillary?
I'm everywhere.
How do they find you, really? Do they?
So Integrity Yacht Sales, you know, is where I work, and but I'm involved in the Seven Seas Cruising Association as well as the Harrington Harbor Sailing Association and the Catalina Yacht Owners Association.
I didn't know that.
I'm associated all sorts of places, but you'll
She's
find me on
Facebook.
She's more
famous than I am.
So
clearly,
I'm everywhere.
Thank you so much. In the show notes. And Ian, how do we find you?
You can find me at Chesapeake Yacht Center in Baltimore, in Canton, and you can find me at my email, which is ian@cyc.yachts, Y-A-C-H-T-S, or on my Instagram, which is at your yacht broker.
Oh, good Instagram name. That's your pretty solid. Broker. I like that a lot.
Often imitated.
Never duplicate.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
No, thank you.
This has been the Funny Boat Podcast. Bon voyage.
Coming for you, Ed.
By the boat.
Poor Ed. He really does get, he gets abused a lot. Don't tell him I said poor Ed. I know I'm going to put this out on the internet, but like, he's not going to listen to this one. He's too vain. He's not in it.
You can tell him he's in it.
I'll just lie to him. Thank you guys so much.